Morning. United States against Gladue. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Chief Judge Eckert, honorable judges of the court, I'm Captain Tiffany Wagner, and I, along with Major Shannon Bennett, represent the appellant, Staff Sergeant Matthew Gladue. In this case, the Air Force Court erred when it found the provision in Staff Sergeant Gladue's pretrial agreement to waive all waivable motions was an express waiver that barred him from asserting any claims of multiplicity or unreasonable multiplication of charges on appeal. In Sergeant Gladue's pretrial agreement, Sergeant Gladue agreed, among other things, to waive all waivable motions in exchange for the convening authority to put a cap on his confinement. During this court-martial, the military judge discussed the existence of his pretrial agreement, including all the provisions in his pretrial agreement, including the provision to waive all waivable motions. In particular, the military judge did a specific inquiry with him, making sure that Sergeant Gladue understood that the PTA provision, waive all waivable motions, precluded the trial court or any appellate court from having the opportunity to determine if he was entitled to relief upon those motions.
Are these waivable motions that we're talking about, are the motions themselves multiplicity or multiplicitous and unreasonable multiplication of charges, are they waivable if it's done properly?
Yes, Your Honor. These motions are technically waivable motions. However, this court in Harryford and Hudson and Britton has said specifically that claims of multiplicity, if waived, they can overcome waiver by showing a plain error. And that's what...
Well, now, are they talking there about waiver or forfeiture?
In those cases, they're talking about waiver.
Where an individual has specifically gone on the record and said, I waive this motion. Or is it a situation where they have just failed to object?
In Harryford and in Hudson, those were unconditional guilty pleas. And so there was nothing on the record to say whether or not there was this provision, waive all waivable motions, in their PTA. That's unknown. Sergeant Gladue is not familiar with any cases where they talk specifically about waive all waivable motions clause being in the pretrial agreement and how that would affect his rights at the appellate level. Sergeant Gladue's position is that he waived it at the trial level to gain a bargain at the trial level. He upheld his end of deal and did not present any motions, hence he didn't preserve any issues of multiplicity, meaning he can't raise multiplicity under the noble standard at the appellate level. However, he is allowed to raise it under a plain error standard, and that is what he attempted to do in his initial assignment of errors to the Air Force Court. And as when they specified an issue on...
So your position is even though he waived these motions at trial, he can still raise them on appeal under plain error?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is your position contingent at all on whether his waiver was knowing with respect to this particular motion? Or are you conceding he waived it and waived it knowingly?
Your Honor, he waived... waivable motions. However, he did not specifically waive the issue of multiplicity or unreasonable multiplication of charges.
Does he have to?
Are you saying he didn't expressly waive it, but is that relevant to what you're arguing today?
Your Honor, I do not think that's actually relevant to what I'm arguing today, because I think no matter whether or not he waived it, whether or not this court determines it was a free and voluntary waiver at the trial level, our position is even if it was a voluntary waiver at the trial level, it would not affect his right to raise an appeal under a plain error standard.
And is your position that it was free and voluntary? I'm asking you a yes or no question.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor, it was a free voluntary waiver at the trial level. However, he was not freely and voluntarily waiving his rights at the appellate level. He wasn't freely and voluntarily waiving his appellate rights, which I think should be a distinction in this case. It wasn't...
Was it knowing?
It was knowing, yes.
I thought the judge said that, and I don't have that in front of me right now, but during the providency inquiry, didn't he tell him that he was giving up the ability to raise this on appeal if he waived the all waivable motions?
Yes, Your Honor, the judge did say that. It's actually on the record on page 122. However, the judge doesn't go into much detail on what that means.
But he was at least on notice that by doing this, he was waiving his appellate rights, supposedly.
It precluded the appellate court from having an opportunity to determine if you are entitled to relief upon those motions. It doesn't specifically address appellate issues. Even though the military judge said that, it's not binding upon this court, it's not binding upon the appellate courts to review an issue under a plein air standard. Under Article 66, courts of criminal appeals may only affirm sentences that are correct in law and fact, which leaves open the reason for plein air. That's why plein air exists, to safeguard. The fact that the military judge says that there is and they precluded his appellate issue, essentially it did preclude him from raising it under a de novo standard, which multiplicity would have normally be reviewed under.
Well, what's the point then of the waiver? If it can be, if the judge is telling him it can't be waived on appeal, and you're now arguing, well, yes, it can be, what's the effect of it?
The effect of the waiver is that, in its essence, it defines what the standard review is going to be at the appellate level. Additionally, it's saving time and cost at the trial level. He's still not raising any motions at the trial level. That saves time and efficiency, which is one of the benefits of a pretrial agreement, and also saves cost because you're not bringing witnesses in for that motion to argue that motion. In return, he's not raising any motions. He's not preserving that issue to be raised.
But it doesn't do much for finality. I mean, here we are years later arguing over something that, at least on the surface, they thought was waived.
I mean, couldn't they have just corrected it at the time? I mean, if he'd raised it at the time, they could have decided it then and fixed the charge sheet and dismissed some of the charges if they so chose.
Yes, Your Honor, that was a possibility the defense counsel could have done. However, a lot of times defense counsels aren't thinking about the appellate issue. They're thinking, what's the best thing for my client at this trial?
Right. So the best thing for the client at the trial was to get a pretrial agreement and have 8 years of his sentence suspended, and now for you to come here many years later and raise an issue that he waived.
Yes, but this court has specifically said that unconditional guilty pleas do not waive multiplicity claims if the multiplicity is plain error. And plain error can be shown by showing that it's factually the same, that the specifications are factually the same. So all Sergeant Gladue was trying to show that the specifications were factually the same, and just the plain error standard to do should be reviewed. But the Air Force Court refused to even do the plain error standard.
Well, now wait a minute. To go a little further on Judge Erdman, then what's the point of the waiver? He either waived it or he didn't. Have we held in a case of express waiver that it doesn't really mean express waiver, all it does is change the standard of review on appellate review?
Your Honor, I'm not sure.
Well, you're asserting that.
Yes, in a way I am. But however,
I think you're explicitly asserting it. You just did.
Yes. This court has said in United States v. Harryford, United States v. Hudson, and United States v. Britain that multiplicity issues may overcome waiver if the specifications are facially duplicative. And it actually says that plain error can be established by showing that the specifications are.
Did those cases involve an explicit waiver, or are they just forfeiture cases?
The court has used the word waiver in those cases.
And the court has been sloppy in the use. Are they cases in which the accused in the care inquiry, as here, was specifically questioned as to whether he waived, among other things, his appellate rights? Or were they simply forfeiture cases where the accused was silent?
Your Honor, I would have to assume that the accused was silent, but we don't know because there isn't information on what was in the PTA. We know there was an unconditional guilty plea in United States v. Harryford. We knew there was a pretrial agreement, but we do not know what. It wasn't addressed at the lower court or at this court what was in the PTA.
Are you conceding that he expressly waived a multiplicity claim?
Yes, he didn't bring it up. He entered an unconditional guilty plea, which would not preserve the issue, and he waived all waivable motions at trial. Really, the position is that plain error is a safe.
So it makes no difference if the military judge cataloged which motions were in question. Well, that's not your reading of the record in any event.
That is not my reading of the record, Your Honor.
Just to clarify, then, my understanding of your answer on that point, it is that, in your view, the accused expressly waived the multiplicity motion at trial, and by expressly waiving at trial, he waived any consideration on appeal of the multiplicity motion except under a plain error standard. Is that your position?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And just to expand on that slightly, this is not a waiver as appellate rights, because under RCM 1110, they set out specific guidelines on how to waive appellate rights. That was not addressed by the Air Force Corps, not addressed at the trial level. This was a deal at the trial level to gain a bargain at the trial level. It was a bargain for both the defense and the government at the trial level.
As part of a pretrial agreement, could a defendant, an accused, waive plain error consideration of any issue?
No, Your Honor, I don't think he can.
Why not?
Your Honor, I think that takes away the power that's given to the Court of Appeals to review findings and sentences for error. And that's why we have appellate courts, a safeguard issues that may have plain error, and that's an avenue that should always exist. Additionally, in order to waive appellate rights under RCM 1110, it's not something that can be waived until after a sentence is decided, so it can't be something that can be waived in a pretrial.
So basically, a PTA is ineffective. The only way you can waive consideration of an issue on appeal is to waive appellate review altogether under 1110.
Yes, Your Honor. However, he is waiving his right to raise it under a de novo standard, which multiplicity would normally be raised under at the appellate courts.
Yeah, you've said that already. But what you're saying is that a waiver, even an express waiver treated in the CARE inquiry, is ineffective to waive appellate consideration of any issue, of any waivable issue, leave jurisdiction and all that aside, unless the appellant or the accused waives appellate review altogether under 1110, which is what 1110 deals with.
Yes, Your Honor. I would also add, though, that with that provision, waive all waivable motions and a waiver of these issues, it would only allow a plain error review.
Right. You said that. Okay. Thank you.
For the foregoing reason, Sergeant Gladue respectfully requests this court.
Can I ask one question? Are they facially duplicative, by the way?
Yes, Your Honor.
And if, let's say you prevail on your first issue of waiver, is this court in position to move on to the next issue and determine whether they're facially duplicative, or do we need more material from you?
Your Honor, you would need more material from us, and actually we request that it be remanded back to the Air Force Court to review it. The Air Force Court has a broader review, and this court has a smaller review of discretion, and so we prefer to go back to the Air Force Court. It also would allow Sergeant Gladue to have an additional bite at the apple, which he would not have if this court decided that issue.
Well, if they're facially duplicative, what other materials needed?
If they're facially duplicative, whether or not you would do the plain error analysis of whether or not any of the substantial rights.
My question was, would you wish to be heard on the issue of facial duplication?
Not at this time, Your Honor. We prefer that it would be sent back to the Air Force Court and have them review it at that time.
Well, as to whether it is, not yes, what to do with it.
Yes.
Is there anything in law that precludes this court, since we would be under a plain error standard then, in determining whether or not it's plain error?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have an opportunity on rebuttal. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court, I am Captain Naomi Porterfield, and I, along with Colonel Gerald R. Bruce, represent the United States in this matter. Today, appellant asserts that he waived the waivable issues of multiplicity and unreasonable multiplication of charges at trial in order to receive a beneficial pretrial agreement, but that he should still be entitled to review under a plain error standard. The cases cited by appellant all deal with the issue of forfeiture, truly. The issue of an express waiver has not been specifically addressed by this court. It was contemplated, however, in United States v. Lloyd, where this court found that absent an express waiver, plain error applies. And that's appellant's argument, that the waiver sets the standard of review. And that argument is true in unconditional plea cases, in cases involving where the issue was not waived by an appellant, forfeiture cases. This is not that case. This is the case contemplated by Lloyd that deals with an express waiver. An appellant who's standing before a military judge under oath acknowledged that he was waiving.
I have a question about the express waiver. The judge said, do you understand that you're waiving your appellate right to do whatever? This is on page 121. And then the judge says, When you elected to give up the right to litigate these motion, and I'm going to be discussing with your counsel shortly what these motions are, and then they go through, we'll call them ABC motions, and ABC motions do not include multiplicity. I understand this is not appellant's position, but why does that constitute an express waiver of the multiplicity motion? When the judge says, do you understand you're giving up A, B, and C, but does not say D?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, two things.
I'm interested in the issue of the colloquy type stuff, not, you know.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, you're right. The military judge did, after having a conversation with the appellant about the all waivable motions provision, he did ask appellant's defense counsel about any specific motions that he was going to raise. What's notable in appellant's pretrial agreement, though, is that fourth provision in his pretrial agreement was not to waive these specific motions. He could have done that, and that's why this is an express waiver. He could have said, I agree to waive the A, B, and C motions that he agreed to waive, the entrapment and suppression motions. But he did not do that. What he did do was agree to foresee the unforeseeable. He agreed to waive any motion that was waivable by virtue of his guilty plea. And so he opted.
So it doesn't matter what the judge then says during the colloquy.
No, Your Honor. What the judge was trying to do was get any. He was trying to be thorough in accordance with this court's prior rulings on having a conversation and seeing what was going on in the appellant's mind at the time. But there's no requirement for him to list all of the possible implications of this provision, only to establish that it was knowing and voluntary. And he did do that in his initial conversation when he said, do you understand that what this means is that you give up the right to make any motion, which by law is given up when you plead guilty? That was expressed.
And then he says, and now I'm going to discuss with your counsel what these motions are. A, B, and C.
Motions that he was contemplating at the time.
That's as you read it. Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is your position then with such a waiver that appellate court should not review for plain error?
Not in express waiver cases.
Okay. Is there a legal policy argument, maybe not this case, but is not there a legal policy argument that, are you saying they're precluded or they just shouldn't do it? What if the government is using its relative advantage during the plea process to stack the charges?
Oh, well.
And the appellant's got a good deal on sentencing, a poor deal on the number of charges and so on, but it would be ineffective to not take 10 years when you might get 100. Shouldn't an appellate court come in and make sure that the government is not overreaching using its relative leverage during the plea process?
Certainly, Your Honor. And this court, along with the Air Force Court, which correctly said that absent
you know, an unreasonable piling on of the charges. They did not forego their responsibilities under Article 66. And
so appellate court should review for plain error?
No, Your Honor. Not
what should they review for?
They should review for an unreasonable piling on of the charges.
Why isn't that multiplication, whatever the queerest thing is, why isn't it that?
Well, Your Honor, this court has not specifically defined what an unreasonable piling on of the charges is.
You're using the technical term, piling on, right?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm quoting Butcher, for example, and the Air Force Court recognizing its Article 66 powers and in its opinion and saying that that's not present in this case. The appellant, notably, has never stated that his waiver.
Let me go back to the should or can't.
Well,
is it your position?
No.
But I want to know what your position is. You're saying we should still, an appellate court should still exercise its good judgment as to what's in the interest of justice.
Always, Your Honor. Okay. That's the United States.
You're not
position.
Going beyond that and saying waived is waived, go away.
Waived is, I mean, yes, Your Honor, that's not the United States' position. The United States' position is that in express waiver cases, plain error standard does not apply. As in this case, a plain error standard does not apply. Of course, the appellate court has the responsibility to make sure that there's not some gross injustice to an appellant.
What theory is that based on, counsel? There's the doctrine of plain error. What theory goes beyond the doctrine of plain error to empower this court to disapprove activities that go on at the courts martial that this court may not particularly like? What standard would we use?
Well, I'm not sure I understand the court's question.
Well, my question is, in your discussion with Judge Baker, you said that plain error wouldn't apply to a review of a multiplicity or unreasonable multiplication of charges issue. If plain error doesn't apply, what standard do we use? Do we just disapprove things we don't like?
No, Your Honor.
So what's the standard then? Isn't that what plain error is all about, is to guide the discretion of courts and to ensure that courts don't disapprove things that go on at trial unless they meet a particular standard?
Well, we would just respectfully disagree with that, particularly in a case such as this. This has a contractual element, Your Honor. And while there are things that may not be, that the court may not like, they are things that if an appellant willingly, knowingly, voluntarily gives up for the benefit of a pretrial agreement, then the court, as the Supreme Court did in cases like Mezzanotto or in Ricketts v. Adamson, quoted by the Air Force Court, in those type of cases, the appellant, when he knowingly waives those rights, then this court should respect the benefit that he received.
Counsel, that wasn't my question. My question wasn't whether we should apply a plain error standard. My question was, you suggested that irrespective of what went on in one of these agreements, there would be circumstances in which our court could intervene and rule that the charges were an unreasonable piling on. And my question is, if we don't apply a plain error standard, what standard do we apply in that situation?
Well, unfortunately, Your Honor, this court has not specifically defined what piling on of charges means. I would certainly welcome such a definition, but what I was referring to, and perhaps I should clarify my response.
It's about things that are inherently contrary to law.
Right. If it's inherently contrary to law, why wouldn't we apply a plain error standard in making that determination as to whether relief is warranted or not?
Because the appellant said that he didn't want you to.
That's again, we're not communicating here.
Okay.
I'm not asking about the waiver in this case. I'm asking about your point that even with the waiver, there would be a situation in which our court could grant relief. And I'm trying to figure out what standard that is that you would have us apply, if not the plain error standard.
Well, Your Honor, I do not have a specific standard of review for you to apply in such a situation, and perhaps I should clarify in my conversation with Judge Baker, what I was saying was that I do not think the court should completely forego a gross injustice that it sees, and that's not the United States' position. We do believe that in an express waiver case such as this, the court should not apply a plain error standard as it contemplated in
Counsel, your point is very clear on that. I understand where you are. So you say we shouldn't apply a plain error standard. There are cases in which we would apply some other standard, but the government isn't prepared to tell us what that standard is or what those cases are, other than that may be out there.
Not some other standard, Your Honor. All I was suggesting in my response, and maybe I misunderstood Judge Baker's question, but the suggestion was merely that, citing United States v. Butcher, absent an unreasonable piling on of charges, plain error should not apply in express waiver cases. That's really what my response was getting at, was this catch-all language that the Air Force Court used that was quoted in Butcher, saying absent an unreasonable piling on of charges. I do not know what piling on meant. I do not know what this court meant when it said piling on of charges, other than this catch-all gross injustice situation that could arise that the United States does not believe is present in this case.
I try the question one more. Let's get away from piling on. Let's say the government batters the door down with no probable cause. Worst scenario, they beat the family, they drag the person off, and so on. And then he waives all motions and expressly waives any Fourth Amendment claims, search and seizure claims, gets a great bargain, a 1 day for 100-year exposure. And what Judge Efron's asking is he's waived appeal of all these things away, and the appellate court gets this and says, whoa, what's going on here? We understand why he waived this, because he got a pretty good deal out of it. Shouldn't we yet look at whether there's plain error regarding the waiver of this motion, whether the judge should have stepped in, and what standard then do you apply? What standard do you apply? Not, you get it?
Yes, Your Honor, I do get it. And in that situation, which was actually...
And it may be that different facts equal different standards, but you got to come up with a standard other than you know it when you see it.
I understand, Your Honor. In United States v. Mezzanotto, the Supreme Court discussed a situation where there is some egregious overreaching abuse by the government. In that case, plain error would apply, but that's only if the appellant can prove fraud or coercion for the agreement. So really, I guess the proper response to your question would be plain error doesn't apply in an express waiver case absent an appellant proving fraud or coercion, and then plain error kicks in.
Okay, so really, if the PTA isn't really an A, it's not an agreement. It's a contract induced by fraud.
Then plain error.
Right, okay. So that's what you're saying.
Yes.
My question was going to be, what can an accused waive? And your answer, I think, is anything other than jurisdiction, other than a non-waivable motion, like a non-waivable thing like jurisdiction, which I think everybody concedes you can't waive.
Yes, Your Honor.
But your position is basically he can waive anything as long as there isn't fraud in the inducement or some other contractual thing that negates the PTA.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Or if it's against public policy.
Or if it's against public policy. The mere possibility of overreaching is not something that should preclude negotiations of pretrial agreements. That was recognized by this court. That was recognized by the Supreme Court in the United States v. Mezzanotto as well. And the appellant, even now, does not claim that his waiver was unknowing or involuntary. Rather,
beyond that, counsel, is not the pretrial agreement limited by RCM 705C and the specific items that cannot be waived in there? That is, speedy trial, due process, complete sentencing proceeding, complete and effective exercise of post-trial and appellate rights. Those are not waivable, are they?
The appellant did not agree to waive rights that could not be waived. No, Your Honor.
He didn't agree to waive the complete and effective exercise of post-trial and appellate rights then.
He exercised his appellate rights. He got an appellate review, and the Air Force Court properly held that he waived certain issues at trial, including the issues of multiplicity and unreasonable multiplication. So no, he didn't waive his review on appeal.
Now, turning to the pretrial agreement itself, the text is that he agreed to waive any waivable motions. So he made no waivable motions at trial, is that correct?
No, Your Honor, he did not waive any waivable motions. He did not make any motions at
right.
trial.
And then the judge said, you give up the right to make any motion, which by law is given up when you plead guilty. He didn't make any motion at that point, did he?
No, Your Honor.
And when the judge said the pretrial agreement precludes this court or any appellate court from having the opportunity to determine if you are entitled to any relief upon those motions, there were no motions, were there?
There were no motions raised at the trial level.
Right. So is he in the same position then as any person, any appellant, who has not made a motion at trial?
No, Your Honor. This court and the Supreme Court have distinguished forfeiture from waiver. And in those cases, that would be forfeiture cases where it was not raised at trial if it was passively ignored.
No, I'm talking about waiver at trial. Isn't he in the same position as anyone else who has affirmatively waived a motion at trial? So if at trial the judge said to him, do you have any multiplicity motions? And his counsel said no, what would be the position on appeal? Is plain error review precluded in that situation?
Well, Your Honor, there are no cases that deal with a negative response to such a question. I do think that the precedent as it exists today deals with express or affirmative waivers in so much as a pretrial agreement. There isn't any case law dealing with a negative response to
Is this case any different from a contested case in which that dialogue takes place? In a contested case, no pretrial agreement, no guilty plea, the military judge looks at the charges and says to the defense counsel, does your client have any multiplicity motion or an unreasonable multiplication of charge motion? And the counsel says on the record, no, we don't have any motions in that regard. Is this case the same or different from that?
That issue has not been addressed by this court. We would submit that it would be somewhat different. This is an appellant affirmatively giving up his right in exchange for, again, a contractual element that's different than saying, oh, no, I don't have that at this time. That is a different situation, we would submit, than saying, in exchange for you knocking 8 years off my sentence or in exchange for you limiting my confinement time to 10 years, then I am going to give up this right. There is a distinction.
Was the government precluded from having the pretrial agreement written so that the accused waived plain error consideration of any issue that would be subject to plain error review?
Your Honor, the United States at this phase wasn't privy to the negotiation conversation.
I'm not asking about the negotiation. I'm asking as a matter of law, is the government permitted to insist and obtain a pretrial agreement in which the accused waives plain error review?
The government could have negotiated with appellant on whether he was willing to give up that review. I do think that.
And how does that fit into RCM 905C, which says that an accused cannot give up the right to complete and effective exercise of post-trial and appellate rights? Why doesn't a trial agreement to give up plain error review give up the right to effective appellate review?
Well, Well, Your Honor, it doesn't give up the right to effective appellate review in its totality. It's only giving up the right regarding certain issues, non-waivable issues.
Well, the reading of the rule, the rule says the complete and effective exercise of post-trial and appellate rights.
Well, I see that my time.
You can answer the question.
The United States' position, Your Honor, is that while a trial counsel and a defense counsel, an appellate can have a contract, a pretrial agreement, pretrial, certainly, I don't think that the manual allows for an appellant to waive his appeal in its totality, given certain circumstances like 1 year of confinement or a punitive discharge. What he can do, as was done in this case, is waive certain issues. What I was saying before was that a trial counsel could negotiate with a defense counsel to waive a certain issue, even for plain error. This court would look at that and determine whether that provision of the contract was unconscionable or whether it was enforceable, certainly. But if that was something that the appellant knowingly and voluntarily wanted to agree to, then that could be included in his pretrial agreement, absent any fraud or coercion, and that would be up to the appellate courts to determine whether that was an enforceable provision.
Counsel, I have a question. Does the United States have a position on what the effect would be if appellant had agreed to waive all waivable motions and now has changed his mind and is going to raise a waivable motion? What is the government's position on the effect on the pretrial agreement?
If he wanted to withdraw from the pretrial agreement?
No. Do you understand my question? I mean, if in fact he is now raising a waivable motion, does the United States have a position as to whether or not he has withdrawn from the pretrial agreement?
Well, the pretrial agreement says on its face that it's null and void if he does not meet the four things that he was required to meet. So if he does not agree with or if he does not fulfill that obligation, then his pretrial agreement is invalid.
Thank you.
If the court has no further questions, we ask that you affirm the findings of the Air Force Court.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Chief Judge Efron, first I'd like to address your issue. If this court does decide to review the issue of plain error, that the appellant would be given the opportunity to submit briefs on the issue of whether or not the specifications were factually the same.
I understand your request, but again, just to clarify, is there any requirement in law that we obtain any further briefing on this issue?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Is the PTA reopened? If you're right, if you're wrong, somebody's right or wrong here. If the appellant expressly waived everything and is now, and the government seems to be taking the view that the PTA is now off the table, what are the implications of that?
If
any.
If it is determined that the PTA is off the table, there are implications. I think that would probably even be an additional issue that I would clearly have to research on behalf of Sergeant Gladue. But he would lose the benefit of the confinement. It was capped at 10 years and he was given 18 years, so it would definitely have an impact, a consequence on him, and definitely something I would have to research further and provide you a more detailed answer.
Well, the convening authority's already wiped it out. Can the convening authority go back and unwipe it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I did not understand the question.
No.
However, appellant's position obviously is that the waive all waivable motions was for the trial level and does not affect the appellate level. It was a trial decision. He didn't raise any motions at trial. And even at the appellate level, we don't refer them as motions. We refer them as assignment of errors and issues.
So let's say that one of the motions that he could have raised at trial was a motion to suppress a confession or a motion to suppress evidence. Okay, those are motions that it's apparent from the face of the trial record that he could have raised and did not raise. Could the CCA or must the CCA or must this court then raise those motions for him and overturn his conviction on the basis of motions that he could have raised and did not in the face of an express waiver of all waivable motions? Because those cases come up here all the time.
No, Your Honor, that waivable motions, that those issues would still be raised and be reviewed under the appellate courts under a plain error standard. That's appellant's position.
So a waive all waivable motions provision in a pretrial agreement means nothing past the trial level. It's basically your position.
Except that he would not preserve the standard review that he may originally have had in those original motions if they were raised and preserved. For example, multiplicity would be reviewed in a de novo standard if it was preserved and raised.
Well, no. If there was no provision in a pretrial agreement and he just didn't raise it, okay, wouldn't we review that for plain error?
Yes, Your Honor.
So he's in the same position either way, whether there's
yes,
whether there's a waiver or no waiver.
Yes, Your Honor. Appellant also wants to note that he did freely and voluntarily waive all waivable motions. He understood that clause. That is clear on the record. However, there was no specific inquiry on the multiplicity issue, and even when he was asked by the military judge, the defense counsel was asked what motions were there. Multiplicity or unreasonable multiplication of charges was never specifically brought up. And appellant further asserts that plain error is necessary review in this situation, eight other situations where there is waiver, to ensure fundamental fairness and integrity of the military justice system. If there are no further questions.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for your presentation today. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until 10 minutes before 10 o'clock.